Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks, welcome to one more edition of Politics Done Right. Today, we will be tackling something that I think is rather important, Ebola, healthcare, and privilege. I don't know if you've been following, but the one person that died from the Ebola, that came to the United States and died from having been infected by Ebola was Thomas Eric Duncan. How different is he than the rest? Why did he die? Did he have to die? Well, before we get into that, a little bit of politics, a little bit of what occurred this week. But before I go there, please remember, folks, the telephone number is 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. I would really like to hear from you guys. I have a lot to say on this subject. I want to read the blog that I wrote a few days ago, which was concerning what the relatives of this young man had to say. But beforehand, news, what's in the news, what's in the news, what's in the news? I don't know if you followed the Kentucky race between Alison Lundgren Grimes and the great Mitch McConnell. What happened? Well, apparently she went to get interviewed by, I guess it was one of the, what do they call that? Let me look it up here, but one of the editorial boards. And when she got to the editorial board, who did you vote for? I mean, first of all, why should they have asked her who did she vote for? You know, if they weren't a plant for, let's say, Mitch McConnell that wanted to get her to say, either I voted for Obama or maybe when they asked, did you vote for Obama? And she answers, yes. There is an ad that goes out immediately that says, did you vote for Obama? Yes. Did you vote for Obama? Yes. Or, I voted for Obama. I voted for Obama. Or, I didn't vote for Obama. I didn't vote for Obama. If she had elected to say any one of those three things, it would have been placed, two of them would have been placed in Republican ads immediately, and the third would likely be played simply in liberal or Democratic regions to say, you can't vote for this woman. She didn't even vote for Obama. So the right thing that came out of that particular dialogue is that she didn't answer the question and she kept on moving it to where it belonged. Obama is not running for anything. It is me. And she's doing whatever she needs to do not to get tied to the president, not to nationalize the election, which is what in an editorial board was attempt to do. An editorial board talking about separation between the media and the politics. Editorial board attempted to have Alison Lundgren Grimes commit herself to say something for the GOP to put in an ad. That's not media. That's not the media being unbiased. And that's why, as we always say, we must be the media. We have got to be the media. Anyhow, next issue that that sort of came up this week, for a very, very long time, we have been, how should I put this, been concerned on exactly, well, first of all, let me give the preface to this. In Texas, Wendy Davis is currently running against Greg Abbott is the candidate for governor, as Wendy Davis is, and the Republican candidate is in a wheelchair. How did he get in that wheelchair? When he was 27 years old, back, I guess, in the early 80s, he was jogging through, I don't remember the part of town that he was jogging through here, but I think it was Montrose, or one of these rather expensive regions in town. He had no insurance. He had no job. He was a law student. And a tree fell on Greg Abbott. When this tree fell on Greg Abbott, he was paralyzed, sadly. It's a bad thing. Nobody wants that to happen. He became a paraplegic. He sued the homeowner and, should I say, the gardener or whoever it is that take care, the company that takes care of the trees. He sued them. After he sued them, he made altogether, Greg Abbott is going to be making over $11 million out of the deal or more. He is currently making $14,000 plus a month from this particular suit. Okay, $14,000 plus a month. And he gets lump sums quite often as well, lump sums of money. I guess last time he got over $200,000 or $400,000, I believe, in a lump sum every year. But again, he also gets his monthly stipend. Now, Greg Abbott has been an advocate of tort reform here in Texas. We've had quite a bit of tort reform here in Texas. And what that has done is that has denied many of those who would want to sue for damages for what has occurred to them to sue and get the kind of rewards that Mr. Greg Abbott was able to get. Well, Greg Abbott, as it turns out, no one going forward will be able to, I don't want to say profit, even though his injury has made him a multimillionaire, but I mean, that aside, nobody wants that to happen to anyone, of course, but nobody, absolutely nobody, can take advantage of what was there for Greg Abbott. In other words, now, what are we saying? It's good for me when it's for me, but when it's for y'all, as we would say here in Texas, there is no cigar. That is the person, that is the type of mentality of the folks that we have running for state government throughout the candidates that are running. The things that are good for them is not good enough for anyone else. But that's just a bit of the news. Going to what we really want to speak about, Ebola, healthcare, and privilege. Now, folks, this is really, really sad. This is really sad. The nephew of Ebola sufferer Thomas Eric Duncan, and this is the blog for the show. The nephew of Ebola sufferer Thomas Eric Duncan, Josephus Weeks, was interviewed by MSNBC's Ronan Farrow. He had some striking things to say about the way the hospital, Texas Health Presbyterian, treated the family. This is what he said. We were mistreated, Josephus Week said. We were again stigmatized. We go in there, we being, you know, ostracized, like we didn't belong there. By the hospital staff, we call, we get the phone hang up on. We stay on hold for 30 minutes. Sometimes we call, we get bounced around the hospital about 15 minutes, and then get told we can't speak to Eric. Eric is his now. But after Reverend Jackson stepped in and he cried out for help for us, then a lot of people started changing that mindset and coming in to assist and being more receptive to our needs. Ronan Farrow then asked why he believed his uncle was turned away from the hospital. Josephus Weeks could not be clearer. Again, he did not have insurance. Josephus Weeks said, and he is a poor black man. He had a very deep accent coming from West Africa. I believe they didn't believe he deserved the care that everyone else should get. And you don't treat people like that. Ronan then asked Reverend Jesse Jackson if he thought it was about discrimination against immigrants or poor people. There is a fact, this is Jesse speaking, there's a fact of anti-immigrant, anti-refugee, anti-black. It is very real in our country, said Jesse Jackson. All we really know is that there was one treatment for the Americans at Emory, one treatment for the American in Nebraska, one treatment for Eric in Dallas. We know that in those cases where there were symptoms, they got immediate relief. He had the symptom, came to the hospital, and was turned away. He came back and laid there for 3 days, really on oxygen drip and drip, in bed sleeping to death, until we began to protest. And now they've begun to make moves to make amends. And that's a good thing, but it did take a cry out from the public. Now, Jackson said that before he died, the day before he died. Relief came too late for Thomas Eric Duncan. He died this morning. That was a couple mornings ago. This should be a wake-up call for the fairness of our healthcare system, even in the times of Obamacare. Ronan Farrow did a great job getting the story in the minds of many, but not spoken. Cameron Hall earlier corrected the false narrative of Kate Snow, who attempted to absolve the hospital by omission. Extremely hurtful, because we all, many of us, I am not going to say we all, many of us who have been in the emergency room, many of us who've been to doctors, many of us who've been within the system, have always understood that it's a tiered system. We have always understood that. And I want to read how I defined the blog for this post today. I said, Thomas Eric Duncan died this week from Ebola. He is the first person treated for Ebola in the U.S. that died. He is also, and that's a little grammar error I had to get it correct, he's also characteristically and otherwise different from all those that survived their bout with Ebola. Sadly, both Thomas Eric Duncan's health care and death reveal much about our privileged healthcare system. Worse, shows that American citizenship, while not explicitly tiered, is definitely, deliberately, and implicitly tiered. Discuss Ebola. Let's discuss healthcare. Let's discuss privilege, folk. telephone number, 646-929-2495. I would love to hear from you, 646-929-2495. Do you have an experience in the emergency room? Do you feel like you were treated like less than in the emergency room because of who you were, because you didn't have insurance, because maybe what you looked like, not even necessarily ethnically, not even necessarily racially, but maybe because you just didn't look right, you just weren't entitled to have received good health care? Think about it, folks. Think about it. Whenever you have a private health care system, whenever you have a for-profit health care system, if you don't look right, if you don't seem like you should or would be a profit center, we don't want to take care of you. We don't want to take care of you. This should be a wake-up call. This should be a wake-up call for us all. Folks, 646-29-2495. I would love to hear your story. I would love you to tell your story. The reality is, if we don't, the system does not change. Again, the reality is, if we don't, the system does not change. The system is a broken system. Let's go a little bit further into this story. Again, folks, 646-929-2495. Think about this. This is the danger of the system. You know, during the healthcare debate, one of the big debates, was whether we should really be insuring those without a green card, those foreigners, those illegals, those undocumented workers. Should we really even allow Obamacare to cover these guys? I mean, after all, these guys are here illegally, aren't they? They're coming to munch on the benevolence of the United States of America. Isn't that what they're doing? Look, let this be a classic case, and it only gets worse from here. Think about this, folks. Thomas Eric Duncan went into a hospital in Dallas. And because at the first sign of his infection, of Ebola if infection materializing, he was sent home. He was sent to a place where he could infect many more. When a country decides to ensure that everybody is insured, they're not doing only the insured a favor. They are doing society a favor. They're saving society, and that is what should be preached out there. For all those supposedly 11 million illegals in here, guess what? They're serving us, and any one of us can be infected with something. And if we don't have the wherewithal to go to get health care, to go to get care for said infection, pretty much time bombs. Not just for us, not just for our families. We are a time bomb for society at large. And that those on the right are so close-minded, that those on the right are so anti-intellectual, that those on the right are so at this point. And folks, I'm not talking about conservatives. I'm not talking about Republicans. I'm talking about right-wing Democrats, which there are, for those who don't know, right-wing Republicans, right-wing independents. And what do I mean by right-wing? Those people that simply, science doesn't mean anything. It's just about me, me, me. It's such about irrational thinking. It's just about these types of behavior that hurt us all, that they themselves cannot see. But this is something that hurts us all. If anybody wants a classic example of why a for-profit system without any kind of centralized controls won't work or cannot work or is not designed to work, Thomas Eric Duncan could have been a time bomb that begins in Dallas country. He could have been a time bomb. And he could have been a time bomb not because we don't have a great healthcare system, but because we have a for-profit healthcare system that puts profit over the well-being of the individual, over the well-being of society, over the well-being of us all. And until that is changed, maybe the only way it is changed is when thousands upon thousands upon thousands of us begin to die, and begin to die from the Ebolas, from the dengue fevers, from all these other diseases that anyone can bring. Anyone that leaves the country or stay in the country or whatever but have no insurance will bring and have no recourse. So folks, when insurance is not given to us all, you're not giving that poor folk only a favor. You are not being milked. You're saving society. You are saving yourself. It's not a favor. You know why a lot of the wealthy folk who control our healthcare system and hospitals don't give a darn? You know why? They don't live among us. You know, there are this class of people. I mean, I wrote a Daily Coast post that drops tomorrow at 12:30. I called it, and I want to give you the right name for it, but I'm not going to read it here, and I'm not going to really discuss it here, but it is going to be a rather important post, because what a lot of folks don't realize, what many don't realize, is that when people always talk about, you know, wealthy 20% or whatever, that's not what it's all about. What it's all about is what or why we actually allow those at the very top, to convince a few, not at the very top, but at the top, to look down at everybody else as threats and be the enforcer of bad policies. So tomorrow, actually, you know, I don't know if you guys remember that the president had a speech last week sometime, where we actually enumerated all the successes of the, all his financial successes and healthcare successes and so forth in his administrations, and they were all true. These were all true. And he said something to the effect like, but it wasn't distributed evenly. And you know what? He was right. It wasn't distributed evenly. So in as much as all the numbers are perfect, all the numbers say we are heading in the right direction, the problem is that many people are not feeling it, many people are not living it, and because many people are not living it, to them, it is not their reality. So that article that drops tomorrow at Daily Coast is called Not Even a Much Improved Obama Economy Can Save the Middle Class. And this healthcare issue with Ebola and there's the new virus, I don't remember what it's called, Runtavirus or whatever, that's starting to kill kids, all these different things, all these different diseases that are on the horizon because of what these guys are pushing. Because of what they're pushing. It hurts us all. Wake up, folks. Wake up. Election is in approximately 25, 26 days or so. Make sure you vote your family's best interest. Make sure you vote the interest of your family, the interest of your town, the interest of your city, the interest of your state, the interest of your country. Because you know what, folks? There's some who only vote the interest of themselves. And that has nothing to do with country. Most of the people singing glory, glory, hallelujah, hear nothing about country. Folks, the number is 646-929-2495. I could talk all day. but I'd love to hear something from you guys. 646-929-2495. I'd love to hear your experience. Do you have insurance? You don't have insurance? Has Obamacare been good for you? Do you understand Obamacare? Do you realize it's about the sign-up period is about to start again? Do you realize that I want to bring up something else about, oh, I see my friend Jack is here. Jack, I'm going to get to you in a little bit, but I want to talk a little bit about Texas again here for this particular reason. Texas did not accept the Medicaid expansion to Obamacare. And as such, because again, we are a for-profit healthcare system here, not having accepted that Medicaid expansion to Obamacare means that our hospitals are in trouble. They still have to treat the indigent for just to get them stabilized, of course. We don't try to keep them alive. We just try to keep them stabilized. Stabilize you and get out of here. Stabilize you, get out of my emergency room, which is what they did with good old Thomas Eric Duncan, the Ebola sufferer. You had 103 fever, take 2 aspirins and go home. But, you know, I came in from South Africa. I came in from West Africa. I came in from Liberia. I hear you, but I don't hear you because you're not a profit center. That is what we're talking about. It's not funny, but it's true. If we want to be frank, the policies in Texas are directly responsible for the death of Thomas Eric Duncan. The blood of Thomas Eric Duncan is on the hands of Rick Perry and all the Republicans in this state that decided we were not going to accept the Medicaid expansion to Obamacare. And I do not say that lightly. Folks are going to say, but hey, he just got into the country. He would not have had even the Medicaid expansion. Yes, he would not have had it. But the hospital would not at the same time be concerned about the price of giving him health care because guess what? He would be able ultimately to be placed on it. If he wasn't on it, eventually he would be able to be placed on it. So again, policy has consequences. Policy has consequences. And for all of those who continue to be blinded by right-wing, bad, evil, and possibly deadly information, if you don't accept reality, it's on you. Sadly, like I mentioned before, Ebola is one of those diseases that knows not what party you're from, knows not what race you are, knows not what religion you are, knows not what citizenship you are. It just gets you. And I tell you, we don't have to have a pandemic in America to realize that we have a flawed system. It shouldn't have to take one. But my fear is, unless we get the right people elected in our state, unless we get the right people elected in our country, that is what it will take. It will take folks. 646-929-2495. Many of you listening, none of you calling, but I think this is my regular Jack.
Okay. You hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let me go on. I suspected from the start that the nurse is to blame, if you're going to have blame, for sending this Thomas Eric Duncan home. And he had 103 fever, which is high. They got another patient as a photographer. I think he had only 101, and they're taking care of him better. I mean, he's supposed to get a vaccine. Eric Duncan is supposed to get a vaccine. It didn't follow through on it. soul. That guy could have been saved, I think. His life could have been saved. But that's all those for-profit crap. That's not only true of health care, it's true of student loans. The government was making a big profit over student loans, and a lot of other things, too much in the military industrial complex that could be cut if we cut down on the contractors. So I'm going all over the book on them, all over the wharf on that. So that's who we got to fight. And then you got to fight the reactionaries.
Jack, you're absolutely right, but I want to point out one thing. I do not want to make the nurse the scapegoat. I don't even want to make the doctor the scapegoat. Do you know I saw a piece on 60 Minutes, and I wish I had pulled it up beforehand, but I probably couldn't find it right now. And the piece on 60 Minutes had the following. When you get to the emergency room, what they want you to do is admit patient. In other words, people coming into that emergency room, they want you admitted. They want you in a room. The problem is they don't want all people in a room. People in a room that have good insurance. They want people in a room if they don't have insurance that they can afford to pay out of pocket. And that's the reason why you notice when you're doing your pre-clearance into the emergency room, they ask you for a credit card, whether you have a credit card, whether you have all these different things they ask you. I mean, it is amazing. You go to the emergency room because your head is banging. You go to the emergency room because your heart's hurt and your arms, you have a cut or whatever. But somehow, before you're taken care of, all these questions are being asked. All these questions are being asked. Right. All these questions are being asked because more important than anything to these people is the money. It's not about health care. And that Americans cannot, or that not Americans, that many Americans cannot see that and start fighting to change this system is an abomination. Now think about this. You go into that place. Those doctors don't have a choice. That nurse doesn't have a choice. That's her job. It is a plutocracy that controls the hospital. It is a plutocracy that controls the movement of these dollars throughout the system. And if she wants to maintain her job as a nurse, if he wants to maintain his job as a doctor, and by the way, I'm talking about special doctors, and I'm not talking about doctors like the ones that own their own practices that usually scheme on insurance companies as well. I'm talking about the doctors that are working, the real doctors that are there at hospitals, doctors like my sister who work and take care of the indigent, doctors like my sister who works in that emergency room and irrespective of what's going on, take care of the people, takes care, do what the Hippocratic's oath says they should be doing. That's what it's all about. And so therefore, you go into that emergency room. So let's not blame doctors and nurses. They are but a minor problem. They're not a problem at all. Let me correct that. They're just within the system. Now, lethal migraine says everyone can afford insurance. If you don't make a lot of money, the government will subsidize it. There is no excuse not to have it. You're partially correct, my dear friend. Under Obamacare, that is true for the vast majority of people, except for the 1 million folks in Texas that fall through the cracks. They cannot afford the Obamacare insurance, and what they need is the Medicaid expansion. It is a part of Obamacare as well, but the one that the Supreme Court struck down. If they get, if they have the Medicaid expansion to Obamacare, then they can qualify. But there's a hole there that the Supreme Court put in there, and I think the Supreme Court placed that hole in there on purpose to give the plausibility that the thing is not working, not the reality, because the reality is the cost of Medicare has fallen the rise in prices has gone down. And this isn't just maybe or we think so or that the president is trying to put this out. That's not truth. My insurance has fallen, along with many self-employed business owners like myself. Their insurance have fallen under Obamacare. Now, this is something that needs to be going to every single Texan, every single American. Everyone deserves to have health care. Society must have everyone with health care. And that's one of the reasons why it shouldn't even really be a choice. Because you not taking care of your health care, it's not only about you. It's also about me. Because if you get something you can't take care of that is contagious, you can effectively hurt me. And that is the reality that many folks simply don't see. It's not only about them. It's not only about, oh, we're giving away something to those people who want to sponge on us. Lethal says, if Texans can't afford insurance, go blame the crooked governor. We are blaming the crooked governor, my dear friend. We are. Why don't you call in? I'd love to hear what else you have to say because you're a smart young man. Anyway, think about this, folks. He is right. It's not about Texans. It's about a crooked governor. And the thing about it is, absent us getting back to reality, absent us electing the right type of politician, we will be here again. Folks, if you don't want to talk on air, you can also send me messages by tweeting with the hashtag politicsdoneright. I accept hashtag politicsdoneright, and I'm monitoring that right now as well. So please feel free, if you don't like to speak on the phone, to go ahead and send your messages to hashtag politicsdoneright, and it'll come up right here in the screen in front of me with whatever you want to talk. But Lethal Migraine, I want to say something else. There was a debate between Wendy Davis and Greg Abbott, and this is something that can be permutated, I think is the word, across the country. Greg Abbott goes on TV and he says that accepting the $110 billion in the Affordable Care Act, meaning the Medicaid expansion, that, by the way, that's how much Texas is giving up, okay? In other words, Texans are paying $100 billion to Uncle Sam in the next 10 years for the Medicaid expansion, and you're getting zero back. So it's money out the door. How fiscally responsible is that? Shouldn't a Texas government that is basically a Republican government that likes to preach fiscal responsibility, let's be clear though, folks, and this is not a partisan thing, this is a fact. The most fiscally responsible governments have always been Democratic governments, not a Republican government. And there's a reason for that. If you don't like taxes, but you still like if you still like to spend on different things, then of course you're not going to have fiscal responsibility. If you want fiscal responsibility, yes, you spend, but you pay for what you spend. When the president passed Obamacare did not increase the budget. In fact, it is dropping the budget. That's a fact. That is a distinct fact. Obamacare has caused the federal budget deficit to go down. Another fact that folks are not talking about. The deficit is at the lowest point since 2008. The deficit has been cut in more than half. You notice nobody's talking about deficit. Nobody talks about Obamacare anymore because you know what? They're both going in the right direction and they're both working. They're not the best, right? I'd love to get socialized medicine here. No, well, maybe I shouldn't call it socialized medicine. I should really call it not socialized medicine, but universal health care. But that's what it is, socialized medicine. That's what I want. There are certain aspects within our society that must be socialized. It's the only equitable thing. And when I say equitable, I mean fair for us all.
Well, the schools are socialized.
Go ahead, sir.
Jack. You're talking to me. You got somebody else on there?
No, you made a statement. I wanted to hear what you said.
Okay. The schools public schools are socialized. They have been since I can remember. And that goes back about 70 years.
It's funny that, it's funny that
public schools are socialist.
Right. It's funny that you said that. And the reason why it is funny that you said that is because, as it turns out,
they want to screw up education, too.
They want to privatize it.
Well, privatize that, privatize the Postal Service. And, of course, I also retired from the Postal Service. Okay, I have what you call FEBHP. That's Federal Employees Health Benefit Program. And I think what the ISA whole in California wants to do is privatize that and kick the postal workers out of they want to do that to, and get it out. So I pay for that out of my pension.
Right.
I think about I think it's $24 that I pay, and I voluntarily pay income tax out of it. Doesn't have to withdraw that. So my experience is that, and now we want universal health care because not all the states will give Medicaid. Kansas will not, is one state that will not expand Medicaid, and it's another problem. If I'm going to try to register, because I moved back to Kansas from Oklahoma just the last couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Right.
And I may encounter, of course, the secretaries of state. They are, I'd say, Republican secretaries of state, almost without exception, are stink bombs as far as suppressing the desire to vote. They have to do is vote out those secretaries of state.
Absolutely. Now, let me tell you,
Texas, whatever. The guy who was running was a secretary of state, I think. Okay. Abbott?
Right. Abbott is actually the attorney general, not the secretary of state.
Same thing. That, all right, has to do with the law, okay? And we got guys like Tillich in North Carolina. Got... bad actors like who the heck is in Texas? Gohmert, yeah.
Gohmert, yes.
Guys like that, yeah. Guys like that, they have to be educated. They are. It's the voters that vote.
Yes.
It's not the legislators. It's the voters that tell them what to do.
I am glad that you said that. But I want to pull you back because there's another caller that I want to bring in, my good old friend from San Antonio. Hey, how you doing, John?
Hey, what's up, Igberto? Yeah, I want to agree with you to a certain extent, but then again, I agree that, Mr. Duncan should have been treated better, but I disagree. I think that it pretty much entirely was on the nurse and especially the doctor. I mean, the doctor, in emergency rooms, doctors are the ones that make decisions. They decide whether he's going to be admitted or whether he's going to not be admitted. And so whoever that doctor was their decision, and it was obviously a very bad decision.
Let me ask you something, John. First of all, you're right. In a pure world, you're absolutely right. But let me ask you this question. That 60-minute report, right, that I saw was a hurtful report. And one of the reasons it was hurtful is the realization that when you go into the emergency room, you are just revenue for a call center. Okay, what I mean by that is you're correct in stating that that doctor is responsible for admitting you or not admitting you or doing whatever test. But if you know within your heart that this particular patient, he is poor, he's from out of the country, he's not an American citizen, nobody's going to really go out there and fight for him as a U.S. citizen or anything like that. Why not pass the problem on? You know, in other words, if he has 103 fever, try to get him out of your emergency room. Maybe he'll go to another emergency room, and that tally wouldn't go on your behalf. That is my concern here, right? This man, his fever, as Jack said earlier, his fever wasn't 101. His fever was 103. You know, and he mentioned that he was in Liberia. Yes. You're right. The doctor probably, I think they both knew, I'll be honest with you, John. I think they both knew that this guy had something, not necessarily Ebola, but he had something. But, you know, willful ignorance sometimes, you know, I remember my daughter said something once that was sort of amusing. She said, "Dad, I just don't want to know because I don't want to be the one that have to make that decision. So that I can be honest, I just don't want to know." And my hunch is that is the sort of thing that occurs at the emergency room. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, I mean, I disagree a little bit. I think most doctors are more true to their profession. I think that it was just a mistake. I mean, I don't think there was any intentional malice. I understand your point about, you know, there are financial factors and they're being drilled into the head of these doctors. And at some point, I mean, it's hard to know because, I'm not in that position. But,
right.
You know, it's hard to know. But I guess maybe I'm being naive. But I do think if he was thinking about all the scrutiny that was going to come on to him or her, I mean, obviously they haven't announced who the person is. But, most people, really severely condemned the decision. And so I think that the fact that it was the first Ebola patient, it wasn't the first one, but I mean, everybody who came in before, they already knew they had Ebola. This is the first one where we didn't know they had Ebola. And so, I mean, I think that they just weren't aware. I just don't think that it was that nefarious. Maybe it was. I see your point
Let me add one thing, because this is what Jackson said when he was interviewed out there also. And you know, we sat down here and wondered, right? Remember when he got placed in the hospital, he didn't get any kind of treatments, like even though supposedly the blood type didn't match, is what they claim now, but they didn't quite come out and say specifically that the blood type between Duncan and I don't remember the name of the doctor that was healed from Ebola that volunteered to give him serum. They said that the blood type didn't match, but they weren't specific about that. But also, they weren't giving him any type of the experimental drugs, which behave like the serum. You know, I mean, that is what these two drugs are. I don't remember what the names of them are right now, but that is what they are. They act. Their behavior is that behavior exhibited by, you know, the blood of the folk who've recovered from Ebola and whose immune system, who has antibodies for it. But again, the thing about it is that Jesse Jackson in the piece said something, and you know, I'm not. Let me be clear. Jesse Jackson normally, I don't particularly follow Jesse because a lot of times he's looking for headlines, but this time wasn't one of those times. You know, this was really a concern kind of a thing. There was no upside for him. And it was interesting in that, no big upside is what I guess I should say, because there's always some upside in doing one of these things. But one of the things that he said is this guy laid for 3 days with an IV, just fluids and lying in bed to die. In other words, there was nothing being tried as far as giving him an experimental treatment, or giving him trying to get serum or finding out if these other folks that have been cured had any kind of, there's nothing being done for him is what he said. And if you listen to the interview that I posted on both Coffee Party and my blog site, one of the things that the guy who said is the treatment that he got in at the hospital where they sort of discounted them. And I was able to empathize with that feeling because I've been there. I remember having my wife in the hospital for a month, and I remember not getting that right treatment. When I say that right treatment is not talking to you, the doctor is not talking past you as if you don't exist, until I put my foot down and really reminded them that, wait a minute, I am not some indigent person walking in here. I'm paying your salary right now to take care of my wife, so I want to know that. And the one time I did that, suddenly everything changed. I got telephone calls with updates. I got all this type of service after I made that clear. But sadly, I shouldn't have to make that clear. They had the preconceived notion that my wife in there wasn't in there with very good insurance. They had the preconceived notion, and I'm talking about the initial doctors that came in and so forth. But as soon as that was made clear to them, the treatment changed. So I understand how the indigent is really treated in these hospitals. And like I said, Lethal Migraine said it here as well. You know, we pay a lot of money for health care, but we don't get our money's worth. And like I don't know if you listened earlier on in the show, John, where I said, we're not really doing a whole lot of people favors more so than we're doing ourselves when we are sure that everybody has access to health care, because we're saving ourselves too. Don't you agree, John?
Well, yeah, I agree. But again, this is, I may have talked about this before on your show. What frustrates me with the progressive and liberal community is that, you know, we all talk about single payer, but we don't talk about the reality of how we're going to pay for it. And this also has to be blended. Well, sometimes you do. I mean, not a lot. this also goes in with the reality of the economic situation. And until we get people to think about in a more communal way, as opposed to being selfish, and this has to do with taxes, and Jack was talking about that other with the student loan situations. If people were thinking about and had respect and empathy for their common man, you know, people wouldn't be so upset about having their taxes raised. You know, that's something that we're going to have to deal with. We're going to have to say this is part of single payer. Part of single payer is having your taxes raised. You know, this is, again, you know, reading about what's going to happen in Vermont, starting in 2015 when they actually submit a plan that Governor Sumlin has been procrastinating.
I want to answer that, and I think I answered that before, but before that I have a call from 724. I'm leaving you hot, but let me bring 724 in. 724, come on in, my friend.
Hi, Berto, it's Greg Russack. How are you?
Hey, Greg, talk to me, my brother.
I know you only have a few minutes left, but I'm going to very quickly answer John's question for him. Paying for healthcare as a single-payer system is the most economically sound thing we could probably do when it comes to healthcare, and here's why. 33% of healthcare delivery costs tied up in administration, and that is because healthcare providers have to be able to process claims to thousands of private insurance companies in the country. Turn it into a single-payer system. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're breaking up cell phone.
Sorry.
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah.
So, again, it's a very simple economic equation. The amount of cost involved in the delivery of health care in America, one-third of it is tied up in processing claims. When you eliminate all that need for claims processing, you reduce the cost of health care. And so instead of me having to contribute $700 and some towards a $1,400 a month private insurance plan out of my payroll, it becomes about a $300 tax. The economics are clear. that's how you pay for single payer.
The thing about it, and I agree 100% with you, the thing I think that concerns John is that transition that people don't quite understand, and that is what we have to. And so, is that correct? Did I paraphrase you correctly, John?
No, not really. I mean, I agree with what Greg's saying, but I mean, the fact is that, you know, it's probably going to be quite a while before a national healthcare system, just because the conservative movement is so strong right now. And so we have to be looking at the states. And so let's look at Vermont. Right now, they need to collect between $1.7 billion and $2.2 billion in additional revenue to actually have single payer work. And so
I got to stop you there and ask you this question. But isn't it true that once that occurs, whoever is paying $600 a month is no longer paying $600 a month?
That's correct. Right. That's really high for somebody with insurance, but I mean, yeah, I'm sure there are some people that are paying that
paying
amount.
$800 a month, $400 to me for actually it dropped because my daughter went on another plan, but it's now $300 something for me, $300 something for my wife. You know, that's a bronze policy. I think we're going for a silver policy when we sign up again in a few days. But anyhow, we're running out of time. So what I want to do real quickly is ask you, Greg, to give me a quick sign out.
Sure. Again, change doesn't happen overnight, but it must happen. And if we're going to make it happen, we have to be smart, educated, well-informed voters. And you can't stay home on November 4th. You got to start getting people to the polls to vote for more progressive individuals, not regressive and conservative politicians. They're the source of the problem. They need to be voted out of office.
Excellent point, and that's what I have been working for. That's what I intend to continue working for. Thank you very much, Greg, for your input. Jack, give me a quick 15 seconds.
I agree with Greg Russell. He's a friend of mine on Facebook, I think. That's what you need to do.
Thank you very much, Jack.
You need to kill those guys that are voting suppression.
Throw the bombs out, Jack. Okay, John, give me a quick sign out.
Yeah, no, I agree with Greg too. The voting is extremely important. I'm going to be there on the 20th when the first, we have the ballots or have the voting starts here in Texas. And that is the most important thing. And liberals also need to be informed of the reality, and we should not try to talk about the reality of the fact that we're going to have more taxes to pay for universal health care, to pay for education, to pay for infrastructure, to pay for all the things that we really need to be a strong nation. And
John,
we
need liberals like you, John, to keep engaged, including continue your engagement in our little domain here. You've been missed. Anyhow, folks, thank you very much for spending this 1 hour with me. Remember, you can get the podcast at the blogtalkradio.com, Coffee Party USA. Please do remember, folks, that we have several shows that you can choose from on Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern, we have Press 1 for Democracy with Dan Aronson. On Thursdays, we have at 3 p.m. Lunch with Loudon. And at Saturdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, you're right here with me, Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis. Please remember to go to coffeepartyusa.com. Be one of us. Be the media. And if you have the wherewithal, please join us. Please subscribe. There's much that we have planned going forward. We will be a force 2016 and beyond. With that, Coffee Party on. Thank you, folks, for listening. Have a wonderful Saturday.